Hey everyone, this is Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal, and this is the Fretboard Journal's occasional, I guess you'd call it, podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in. Every time we do one of these, we try to talk to one of our favorite musicians or instrument builders. This episode is no exception. Chris Funk of the Decemberists in Black Prairie came through right before his Seattle soundcheck at the Tractor Tavern with Black Prairie, and really glad he was able to stop by. He brought his dobro made by Todd Kleinsmith. And Chris is one of those guys. Colin Malloy gets most of the attention of the Decemberists, obviously, but Chris is a really interesting guy, and the sounds that he's able to bring to the table with that band and with Black Prairie are really amazing. And he is a true multi-instrumentalist. He's playing everything under the sun: six-string guitar, Irish bouzouki, theremin, banjo, dobro, you name it. So we talk a lot about his gear. We talk a lot about just his musical background, because I was a little in the dark about how he ended up from where he came from to Portland, which is obviously the home and mecca for the Decemberists. So we talk about all that. Before I get to that, just a quick announcement. Fretboard Journal 32 with our massive, massive Ry Cooter interview is out now. It's a really special issue. Please, please, please subscribe to the Fretboard Journal if you haven't yet. As a reader-supported magazine, every subscription counts, and it allows us to do a magazine that is quite a bit different from the other magazines out there. And also, don't forget to check out fretboardjournal.com. We have some great content up there right now, including an interview with Dudley from the Seldom Scene, the amazing tale of Bill Frisell and his Gibson ES-175 that was lost for nearly four decades but found by Bill, and a lot more. So check all that good stuff out, and without further ado, here is Chris Funk, the amazing musician from both Black Prairie and the Decemberists. Chris, thanks so much for coming to the Fretboard Journal.
Thanks for having me.
You are someone who has been on my radar just because you're on so many amazing records, but I don't really know what you were up to pre-Decemberists. So what's your story? I mean, you play everything from hurdy-gurdy to guitar and dobro and banjo. How did all this happen?
Yeah, try. Well, I won't go back that far because that story is really boring. This one's going to be that riveting. But I worked at a folk music shop in Indiana, and that's kind of where I learned about all these instruments and sort of my acoustic upbringing in the 90s. Yeah. Similar maybe to like Dusty Strings here in Seattle, where we're at right now. And there's a lot of bluegrass in Indiana, so I got really interested in playing square neck resonators and all kinds of slack key style of guitars in the square neck variety, because that was the one instrument in the folk shop that people weren't shredding on. So I was like, well, this will be my role. I'll be pretend Jerry Douglas right now or something. So I just had a strong interest in American music and acoustic music, I think, you know. But I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago, so I like all kinds of music. So it's not just one thing. But Indiana is very rich in bluegrass, and in the area I was in, there was a strong folk music scene. So,
yeah. And then you started playing out in that area, or
And then I did. I mean, kind of, not really. And then I was just one day, I was like, I'm going to move to Oregon and work in music. You know, get a band together, and somehow it worked, which is counterintuitive. You think you would, you know, a stupid kid from the Midwest would go to New York or LA or something, but I knew John Fahey lived in Oregon, and that was a big draw for me. I'm a big John Fahey fan. And I knew Bill Frisell lived here.
Yep.
They're two of my idols. And somehow that made sense to me in my 25-year-old head brain.
Yeah, sure.
And I don't know. I just sort of like, there's a wanderlust, I think, that if you're from the Midwest, and I grew up in the Steel Belt, that the Pacific Northwest holds for people that live there. And it's totally true. You know, it's fantastic here. But that was how it came to be. And I met the Decemberists, who were just forming, basically, at the time. Colin had just moved out from Missoula and had a band called Tarkio, and came and met. He had a vision of the band, so it was like an accordion, and Jenny and Nate, who plays upright.
Yeah.
He wanted this band, you know, at the time, indie rock was kind of totally ripped. You know, Built to Spill was like the form or pavement, so it, I think it was kind of visionary of him in a way. Not that other bands haven't done that, but he knew I played pedal steel, so he was wanting a pedal steel player. So he always jokes that we looked like this weird tango band in the indie rock club.
How did he find you on the pedal steel?
I was working in a booking, like a booking agency office for bands, like trying to route tours unsuccessfully, like pre-internet.
Out of Portland. Okay.
I remember, like, I got the job there and they plopped down a CMJ journal of, like, touring and promotion. And was like, get him a tour. And I was like, oh, okay. And he came there looking for gig, like a booking agent.
Okay.
You know, like a lot of people do with no game yet.
Yeah.
And, had heard I played pedal steel, and then I met them and was like, wow, this band's really cool.
Yeah.
I just liked the songs. So off we went.
And the next thing you know, you're on Parks and Recreation.
Yeah. And here we are. Yeah.
And then you're in town right now for Black Prairie, and you're going on the road for the next month or most of the month.
Yep.
How did the decision to kind of take some of the members of the band and go in that direction happen?
I think, it was, for me, it was a need to play Dobro again. And we actually got booked in at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival, and I just kind of like reconnected with that music, you know, even though there's not a ton of bluegrass music, unfortunately, at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival.
The Decemberists were booked at Telluride.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
So, but in the morning there is. So seeing Tony Rice play again, I was like, right, I like that. And I got to meet Jerry Douglas, who's like my idol. And I'm like, God, I want to do this and, you know, play this music. And it's not really right. At the time, I think the album we have now is quite similar in some ways. But so we just started kind of jamming, you know, on the road, like what we considered to be, you know, trying to learn some bluegrass, some of us, you know, and Jenny was on accordion, which is not considered bluegrass, even though, you know, I think it is. Bill Monroe played with an accordion player. So, you know, we just learned like fiddle tunes and stuff, Nate and Jenny and I. And then the idea was to, you know, like we should just start a band and, you know, just do instrumental music. We were really inspired by this band, the Tin Hat Trio.
Yeah.
And we really love that sort of cinematic accordion music mixed with slide guitars and this sort of loose idea of maybe what a European thinks America looks like, you know?
Yeah.
Which is, I think, somewhat true. So, you know, how you can make underscore music of your soul that feels like the Spants, you know, it feels like the West or something. And that was just kind of the beginnings. And in that, we found people that could play that music better than we could and probably still can, which is John Neufeld, who plays in a great band called Jack Straw and a gypsy jazz band called the Kung Pao Chickens, who I think has done some stuff with you guys.
Yeah.
And this gal, Annalisa Tornfelt, who plays fiddle and was in a band called Barefoot Bluegrass from Alaska.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So she's like a shredder, is, you know. So that's how it started. It was just to write instrumental music, and eventually it's just sort of morphed into, not the experiment with our new record was to write all lyrical music, so it's sort of backwards, you know. Usually maybe a songwriter gets hired to underscore a film, so we started the other way. So that was the idea, just starting off as an acoustic band and exploring the American idiom of what that might mean to us.
And did you want to be kind of like the Tin Hat Trio and try to actually score silent movies or movies?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think everybody says they want to do that at some point, and I've actually done it a little bit, and it's really hard work. And I don't think I want to do that ever again.
Yeah.
We scored a children's play called The Storm in the Barn, which is written about the 1937 Dust Bowl.
Yeah.
And it was based on a children's book, and we did that, and that was really fun. And the actors actually played us on stage, walking around and doing the music on stage. So that was a lot of fun. So we took a swing at it, and that went really well. So maybe I should buck up and try it again.
Music ventriloquism.
Yeah. So that's kind of the origins of the band and of this band.
And do you have other projects going right now? I know you've kind of been all over the map over the years.
I do. I do some producing also. So I just produced, there's a girl named Sally Ford from Portland.
Sure.
Just produced her new record and it's just finishing up. And then finishing up a record with Rhett Miller from the old 97s.
Yeah.
And it's his solo record. And actually Black Prairie is the band. We met him on the road and he was like, we should do a record. And we're, you know, all hammered after a show. And we're like, yeah, sure, let's do it. And he actually held us to it and we did it. So I signed on as the producer of that, which has been been really fun. But December is still recording right now, so kind of just juggling Black Prairie and then December's recording up until the December's record will come out sometime in 2015. And that will keep me plenty busy.
That's plenty busy.
Yeah.
How does the songwriting process work in Black Prairie versus the Decemberists?
Well, Decemberists is, you know, Colin's the primary.
Yeah.
And he walks in with a song and we go for it.
And he's pretty much figured it all out on his guitar?
It depends. Sometimes, you know, over the years, things haven't been that spelled out and we just jump in. Other times he's, you know, gotten into recording and played parts and been like, here's the stuff I'm thinking of. What do you think of that? And we're like, sure. And we just kind of go start. There's a starting point, which is great.
Yeah.
Because we don't have, you know, we don't allow time to get together and just jam anymore for some reason, which is kind of a bummer. But that's how these things go, I guess, when you start touring. But actually on this record, on the record we're doing right now, we have done it over a period of like a year. So it's been great to sort of go in and just not rush it and not do it in one moment over 6 weeks or something.
Yeah.
So this record was a little bit, is feeling a little bit looser in that way.
Yeah.
Just play and let's record and figure out parts. So in Black Prairie, everybody's a equal songwriter in the sense that people can just bring songs and write parts. And on this record, like I mentioned, it's an all vocal record, all lyrical record.
Yeah.
And so it was interesting, everybody writing lyrics and, you know, getting into lyric writing and people
Democracy.
Writing lyrical melodies and people taking parts of ideas they had and smashing it into another song and trying to make, you know, a sort of a conventional 3.5 minute song.
Yeah.
So it's not so much a democracy, it's kind of just like whoever has an idea can kind of get in there. And so that was really interesting to do and inspiring as a, you know, effectively me being a sideman for so many years in the Decemberists, you know.
Yeah.
Or, you know, writing my guitar lines or whatever, really getting into the form of lyrics. And so I think it's something we're all excited to explore more.
Yeah. The new record is fantastic. It's not
Thanks.
Anything, though, like what you probably wanted to start off with, which is kind of bluegrassy, is your head
yeah.
kind of like, I still have that yearning to be Tony Rice or Jerry Douglas? Or...
No, because I've met them and realized I won't ever be them. No, I still like to play that music, and Annalisa and John are very active in the old-time scene in Portland. Annalisa in particular in the old-time scene and
yeah.
square dance scene and bluegrass scene, and John plays a ton of bluegrass. But I think we are all just, I think Annalisa is really excited as a, having grown up playing bluegrass, never really approaching songs in the rock idiom. You know, there's
yeah.
a couple songs on this album that are pretty much, I think, classic, almost classic rock sounding.
Yeah.
So she's really excited to sing that. And John is a guitar player. He actually grew up as more of a sort of a dirtball metalhead. So it's kind of hearkening back to, I think, things he tried to forget and is kind of revisiting on the acoustic guitar. So sort of exploring how acoustic guitars fit into that sonic landscape has been really fun. And
yeah.
The producer we worked with was really great at kind of bringing those tones out of that too, while
yeah.
sort of retaining this acoustic feel. So,
and what, I'm curious, because I think of you as being able to play so many different instruments. What do you take out on the road with Black Prairie? What do you take out on the road with the Decemberists? Like,
sure.
do you have kind of a... A little pile in the corner of your house where it's like...
I do, yeah.
You do?
Yeah, it's an evolving pile, as people listening to this obviously like to buy instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah, Black Prairie, I'll play dobro, mandolin, bouzouki, the Irish bouzouki, and the auto harp.
Okay.
And probably will end up bringing banjo also, but I didn't bring it on this leg of the tour, but people are moaning about not being able to play certain songs. Which is hilarious because the other idea of this band was to bring one instrument, and I can't do it. I cannot do it. So, and then the Decemberists, you know, it's a very similar arsenal of instruments plus a lot of electric guitar. So
yeah.
that's where I get to play my electric guitar stuff, which I love to do still.
And what's your go-to electric guitar?
Right now, I don't. It's funny because I realize I'm like, I don't own anything cool or vintage, so. I think I'm going to dive in and buy like an old Jazzmaster
yeah.
at some point here pretty quick. I've been looking at them. Actually, I played Sally Ford has an amazing like
yeah.
60s era. I don't know what year exactly.
Yeah.
And I was like, wow, I get it. But There's a company in Michigan called Reverend Guitars. They yeah. make awesome guitars. I like that guitar. It's like solid. It's a Club King, it's called. Mm-hmm. It's a great guitar. I have like a really basic SG I play all the time. And I have a 12-string that's made by Phantom, who's had kind of a lawsuit happening lately with the Vox/Korg company, which
okay.
is generally interesting. It's Jack Charles from the band Quarter Flash. He started this company. And it's kind of a beater, you know, and I bought it when I didn't have any money, but I've just been upgrading it and changing the pickups, you know, put like Lawler P90s in it
yeah.
and just keep going with it. And it's sort of like just become one of my guitars, you know, all these old, like, well, I was like, well, that's what an old Silvertone really is. It's a kind of a hunk of junk, honestly, but
yeah.
you wear it in and you make it your own.
Yeah.
So that's my go-to. And then lately I've been playing these amps out of Portland, made by Chris Benson, who mm-hmm. are just, it's bananas. I'm really in love with it. I played it in Tucker Martin's studio.
Yeah.
And it's a really cool reverb preamp, basically, and a sort of a 15-watt head.
Okay.
But it totally rocks, and I'm so excited to play it on stage.
And will it's you really put cool. everything through that, or?
I'm going to try to, yeah. I probably will have to have a couple different setups, you know. But I'm going to try to. I keep going. In the studio with Tucker, he has a mountain of amps, and I just kept going back to that amp.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, I think it might do the trick. Yeah.
So when you thought Black Prairie was going to result in you just lugging one instrument around, what instrument was it going to be?
At the time, it was the Dobro.
It was the Dobro, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That was like the, for me, the beginning of that band. The band was built around, at least in my head, me getting to play that instrument a lot.
Yeah. yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know. I just started writing on the bouzouki, as it takes you out, you know, like playing tenor guitar or whatever, it takes you out of the idiom of six strings, obviously.
Yeah.
So it puts your head in a different place with different intervals, and I just wrote different things on it. And it kind of had the bouzouki has more of this aggressive tone, or you can have, as
yeah.
strange as that sounds, I think it does.
Yeah.
You can really rail on it, so it just sort of fit these songs I had in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And who made your Dobro and who made your bouzouki?
The Dobro was made by Todd Kleinsmith in
oh,
Oregon.
Nice. Yeah.
It's a really nice Dobro. It's like rosewood and spruce topped, which is unconventional, but I kind of stole that idea from Rob Ikes.
Yeah.
Because I thought it sounded cool, and luckily it did, because you don't get to hear these before you order no. them.
And those things are pricey.
yeah. And the bouzouki I have right now is just a Trinity, like a totally, you know, cheap Trinity, but
yeah.
Weber is actually building me sort of a hybrid, which I guess is kind of their octave mandolin, like a Florentine style, but it's going to be a bouzouki, be strung like a bouzouki, so not chorus strings on the G and the
yeah.
and the think brain on the G and D strings. You
yeah.
know, they'll be like, I don't know what you call that, 12 stringed out or not chorused.
Yeah,
high low.
Yeah,
and some other modifications.
And too. They're kind of in your backyard now. I just went and visited them.
Yeah.
Down in Bend.
It's quite the operation up there. It's insane.
Yeah.
But they're doing really cool work for a company of that size. I think a lot of the special guitars they're doing, you know, Weber Breedlove. And,
yeah.
You know, it's amazing.
Bedell.
Bedell. Yeah, the Bedell stuff is kind of nuts.
Did you know Bruce Weber and the gang before that transition?
No. Or well, I've always had a relationship with Breedlove. I play a Breedlove mandolin, and I play a... I have a Breedlove tenor guitar, and I have a Breedlove Weisenborn, which I think is it's all Koa, but I'm blanking on his name. Ed Gearhart model.
Yeah.
Who's a great player.
Yeah.
And what else do I have? Oh, I have a triple O or a double O parlor style guitar from them too. That's awesome.
Cool.
So I've had a long relationship with them, and they have been merging and flipping staff, and
yeah.
so I actually just recently went up there, and I was like, "Oh, you have a Weber in there? Interesting." Because I've always been admired their instruments a lot. So
yeah,
it's nice to have them in Oregon.
Yeah. So you in just our short conversation have mentioned a ton about this, you know, not only Oregon's luthery scene, but also the music world down there.
Yeah.
How has Portland, as somebody who's kind of ridden this wave through the Portlandia thing, like mm-hmm. Can you generalize how the music scene has changed in the time you've been there? It seems like such a crazy melting pot.
It's hard to say. You know, I always say you can only understand the chapters of your life when you're looking back through the book, you know?
Yeah.
So it's hard to really say like how it was in comparison to how it is now. I always feel like there was a lot of, young bands there in the rock scene.
Yep.
I do feel like the old time scene has exploded there. And a lot of these sort of jug band kind of bands have exploded there. So not exploded, but there's an explosion of them. There's more of them, just to be clear. And I think there's a lot of people just interested in acoustic music across the board in the United States in general. So it's kind of hard to say if Portland has that more than other places.
Sure.
But that said, I feel like you walk around the neighborhood still and you hear bands rehearsing like crazy. Like there's this crazy metal band rehearsing next door to me right now. And I'm like, cool, keeping it alive. Because when I first moved to Portland, you could, it's that sad tale. And it's the same as Seattle. I'm sure you could rent a house and have a basement and have a band.
Sure.
And I think that's really going by the wayside in Portland. I think Portland's kind of, as a city, catching up to what happened to Seattle in the 90s.
Sure.
There's just these condos going up like crazy, which I think is fine. But there's a lot of people moving there, and as a result, it's really hard to get a rental as a younger musician, I think, or someone that wants to lead a bohemian lifestyle and do art.
Yeah.
It's exciting. I mean, you can name a style of music, and I think it's in Portland, and the people are the community of Portland. People always talk about music communities as if we're hanging out, having coffee, like with rappers or something. And you don't really do that, but I think when those people get together, it's always really cordial and a lot of fun when you sort of cross genres.
Yeah.
So I try to keep up with the younger scene, the 21-year-old house concert scene down there, which is the punk rock sort of. It's not a house concert, that's misleading. There is a great house concert in the folk scene, but also the underground concerts.
Yeah.
And there's just tons of them. There's tons of great young bands doing anything from folk to still what I would call indie rock, I guess. So to answer your question, it feels alive and well, but who knows? It felt alive and well when I moved there. It felt overwhelming. I mean,
yeah,
it was an exciting time kind of seeing Elliott Smith literally like walk down the street, when I first moved there. So
it's pretty crazy.
That was like seeing Elvis to me,
Of course, yeah. No urge to go have a farmstead somewhere and do the organic farming. And
me or him.
You.
We've toyed with it, but not yet, no. I really love city life, which is strange because I moved away from a city to get to what I thought was going to be nature, moving to Oregon, but I just gravitated right back to a city.
Yeah.
And I just need that. I need the pulse of that, or at least think that that's around me at my fingertips whenever I need it. So,
yeah.
No farms yet.
All right, cool. Well, thank you so much, Chris, for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
I know you got to go to soundcheck.
I do.
Thanks.
Yeah, thanks a lot.